Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 83. My name is John. While we're on this subject, could we change the subject now? I was knocking on your ear's door, but you are always out. I need a break from politics for just a little bit. So there's only a pinch of politics this time around in this podcast at the very end of the episode. And also because it's my birthday. Yes, this podcast is being published on my birthday just for the hell of it. So I want to have a little fun. Maybe do kind of a year in review, so to speak. A lot of people hated 2016. Now, my gut reaction when people ask how 2016 was for me is it was just fine. But then, despite the adjective I use to describe this podcast, I do try to focus on the positives. The funny thing is, when I start thinking about everything that happened to me and around me for the past year, I start to change my mind. I won't bore you with too many details, but my job, which I used to absolutely love, turned sour in 2015 and worsened in 2016. In general, this small company I work for is growing too fast for its employees to be efficient and properly service its customers, but they refuse to hire more people because of the magical 100-employee threshold where more government regulations kick in. Their philosophy is to never say no to a customer, even if we don't have the people, technology, or a plan on how to do what the customer asks. That's not an exaggeration. That is an actual quote from a staff meeting, and it was not meant as a joke. They basically hope to figure it out before the customer realizes we're making promises we can't keep. I guess that's better than one of the other corporations that I work for, where they just flat out told us to lie. So I've had to spend some time weighing a job search and whether or not I want to change careers in my mid-40s. Also, Gina and I, for those of you who don't know, have an open marriage, but both of us have gotten away from seeing other people in the past year. Gina was getting tired of the flaky guys, and while she does like guys younger than her, she prefers men in their mid-30s. The majority of the men who contact her are in their early to mid-20s, and pretty brazen and disrespectful. So between that and the loss of some of her longer-term relationships, she's dropped out of dating. And as I mentioned briefly in the last podcast, the woman I had been dating for a little over a year gave me the I need some time to myself speech, and that certainly added to the negative side of 2016 for me. I admit it, I enjoyed her company, and it hit me a little bit harder than I care to admit. And after that, I had a long string of meeting people online who are one-and-dones or ghosts or who just outright rejected me, despite what seemed to be a good rapport. So I dropped off every dating site. I only kept a fetish site account because I'd only recently joined, and I'm really using it more to see what non-vanilla is out there. By the way, if you need me to explain any of those phrases, just tweet me. The way I'm approaching it is different from Gina. She's out of the game indefinitely. I'm still open to dating if it happens organically. If I meet somebody while I'm out sometime and it turns into something, that's fine. But I'm just taking a break from actively looking for anything on dating sites. Of course, I also mentioned in a previous podcast, Gina had a fall in late summer, and that turned into 8 weeks of cast or walking boot on her ankle. And while it healed, it caused us to change our anniversary vacation plans. On the other hand, there were a lot of good things about the year. If I had to pick a single moment, I would go with Gina and I leaning against a stone wall at a lookout point in Hot Springs, Arkansas, as the full moon came up over the horizon. We wouldn't have been there to see that if she hadn't hurt herself, so I guess something good came out of something bad. That was one of those simple, quiet, perfect moments where all that mattered was the two of us together. And just being able to say that in the past year I loved and was loved, well, that makes it a good year. I got to fly a kite on the beach of Mustang Island, Texas. I walked on Beale Street in Memphis. I had some amazing meals. If you find yourself in Biloxi, Mississippi, I suggest the shrimp and grits from the Reef Restaurant. If you're in New Orleans, you absolutely must have the fried chicken at Willie Mae's. I was back in New Orleans for the first time since we narrowly escaped Katrina. I'll have to tell that story one of these days. I got to see two of my favorite bands, Collective Soul and The Interrupters. I had people cheering me at karaoke. I finally got to see Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman together on the silver screen, and I don't give a fuck what anybody else thinks. Dawn of Justice was a good movie, but you already know that from a previous podcast. While Suicide Squad was not as good, and I can think of many ways it could have been better, it still outranks at least 75% of the Marvel movies. Oh, another movie that audiences hated before it even came out, but I enjoyed it, was the Ghostbusters reboot. Give that a shot. That's where I fell in love with Kate McKinnon. I have three sports teams that I follow. One in the NBA, one on Australian football, and one in Major League Baseball. My Spurs played a good regular season, tied the Celtics for the best single-season home record, so that was nice. Though it was difficult to see Tim Duncan, one of the greatest players of all time, retire. My Geelong Cats also had a decent year, and I hope the loss of a lot of key players like Jimmy Bartel and Corey Enright to retirement won't mean a step back for them next year. So those two teams had good years, but not championship years. So when the baseball playoffs rolled around, my hopes for one of my teams to win it all hinged on the Chicago Cubs. So why am I a fan of the Chicago Cubs living in South Texas? It's because of Scooby-Doo. Yes, I said Scooby-Doo. You know, Hanna-Barbera, Shaggy, Velma, Daphne, Fred. When I was in middle school, my parents had just gotten cable, and the Chicago station, WGN, played Scooby-Doo on weekday afternoons. So I would run home every day so I could watch Scooby-Doo. Sometimes they had the episodes where Scooby and the gang meet Batman or Mama Cass, and those were always the best. But this was back in the 80s, when WGN televised nearly every single Cubs game, and Wrigley Field did not yet have lights, which meant all the home games were played in the afternoon. So when springtime would roll around, I would run home and turn the cable to WGN to watch Scooby-Doo, and instead, there was baseball. Now, again, this is South Texas, where football in general and the Dallas Cowboys in specific reign supreme. Baseball? Who gives a shit? The closest baseball was that crappy team from Houston, or the even crappier team up in Dallas. And, of course, you had on cable TBS showing the Braves games, and WOR showing the Mets games. But WGN had something that nobody else did. Harry Carey. Listening to Harry Carey was like listening to your friend's fun, slightly drunk grandpa tell great baseball stories, right alongside Steve Stone, who was a damn fine color commentator in his own right. Ryne Sandberg, my favorite all-time player, was in his prime. He would be joined by the likes of Andre Dawson, Mark Grace, Greg Maddux, Sean Dunstan. I became a fan. I always dreamed of going to Wrigley Field to watch the Cubs play. But I grew up in a lower middle class family, and we never really went on vacation. All we ever did was weekend getaways to places within a couple hours drive of our house. Hell, I never even left the state of Texas until the day after Gina and I got married. But as Gina and I worked hard to get out of debt and make a life for ourselves, we realized we could do some traveling. My company had me fly up to Toronto in late 2003 for a client meeting, and I had to make a connection in Chicago. Flying into and out of O'Hare, I got a good long look at the city. And I was determined to go. So Gina and I decided that it was time for me to go see the Cubs. And she didn't want to go, so I was on my own. Now, 2004 was another turbulent year. That was when I had an upheaval in my religious life. That was chronicled way back in the second year of this podcast, so I'm not going to get into it here. But this was also back when I worked for a travel agency, and there were some great perks. So I got a super cheap ticket and a super cheap hotel room, and I got to stay in the Loop in Chicago at a really nice hotel for almost nothing. I was finally there in this city I had heard so much about for the past 20 years. Now, the Cubs were in Pittsburgh the first couple of days of my trip, so I got to explore the city a little bit. Then, the day came for the first of three games that I got tickets for to Wrigley. I got out of the hotel a couple of hours before game time, and I hopped on the already packed Red Line going north. I stared at the map on the train. I knew I had to get out at the Addison station, so I watched as we got closer and closer. And I looked out the window, and I saw the top of the lights of Wrigley Field. And a moment later, between the buildings, I caught a glimpse of the side of the stadium. Finally, as we pulled into the station, I could see it. Wrigley Field, my personal sports mecca. As the train emptied out of the hundreds and hundreds of Cubs fans, I stepped out and stood on the platform. And I thought to myself, I'm here. I'm really here. And as the Red Line train pulled away, I looked at Wrigley Field and I cried. I was so happy to finally get to this place I had so long wanted to visit. I followed the crowd out of the station and to the park. Wrigleyville was nothing short of a cacophony of Cubs fans. It was both overwhelming and inviting. I walked to the nearest gate, handed my ticket to the lady, and said, "Hi. It's my first time here." She smiled and said, "Well, all right, welcome, and I hope you have a great time." And that was how I first walked into the friendly confines. I walked around as much as I could and took as many pictures as possible. It's probably a couple of hundred just on that first day. Greg Maddux pitched what would be his 298th career victory that day. Outside of my days with Gina, that was one of the best of my life. I saw the three-game series there against the Astros, and then I had to head home. I convinced Gina to go with me the next time, and for a few years, that was our summer vacation, a few days in Chicago with the Cubs. I remember vividly the final out of the 2016 World Series. It would be the second time in my life the Cubs made me cry tears of joy. The funny thing is, I almost went to bed early. I had been sick and missed several days from work, so I had been playing catch-up for days. I was exhausted. Because of my recent sickness and because I had so much to do, I knew I couldn't call in to work the next day. But I didn't know if I could take the Cubs blowing yet another chance after they had given up a decent lead to the Indians. I didn't like Hendricks coming out of the game early. I didn't like Lester coming out of the game early. And I didn't like Chapman coming in so early. Plus, there was a rain delay. And at the time, we weren't sure how long it would be. But just as I was about to give up and head for bed, they said that the short delay was almost over. So I figured, okay, one more inning, just to see if they can do something in the top of the 10th. When Zobrist's base hit gave the Cubs the lead, I was hopeful once more. When Montero gave them the insurance run, I just knew they were going to need it. Sure enough, the Indians came back with another run and the opportunity to win it all. I sat, literally, the edge of my seat, rocking gently back and forth. When Martinez hit that little dribbler on the infield, I stood up, pointing at the TV. This is it! This is it! As Brian threw the ball to Rizzo for the final out, I threw my hands in the air and I screamed, "Yes! Yes! 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 Yes!" I didn't go to bed until about 2:30 that morning, and I woke up at 6 a.m. to go to work. Had to go through a couple of energy drinks just to get through the day. Oh yeah, totally worth it. The way I see it, for the next week after that, if any member of the Cubs was out in public, they could have pointed at any adult Cubs fan and said, "You, give me a blowjob, right here, right now." And we would have pretty much had to. But all kidding aside, it still seems like a dream. I mean, yes, it's just a game. No, it's not important in the grand scheme of things. So what? I'm reminded of a Dennis Leary quote. "Happiness comes in small doses, folks. It's a cigarette butt, or a chocolate chip cookie, or a 5-second orgasm. You come, you smoke the butt, you eat the cookie, you go to sleep, wake up, and go back to fucking work the next morning. That's it. End of fucking list." When you overcome 108 years, multiple generations of futility, that's really cool. If you're a fan of the Cubs, 2016 had to have some good in it. We are so engrossed in the negatives. I guess that's nothing new with humanity. But even in the midst of the sadness, I think there are glimmers of hope. Even among the disappointments, there are lessons to be learned from the events of 2016. The first lesson 2016 tried to teach us is found amongst the celebrity deaths. We lost icons of sports, icons of music, and icons of the screen last year. Most people have been reacting to the seemingly inordinate amount of death with hatred toward 2016. The lesson is not to curse time or fate. Rather, to appreciate those with the talent to sway your emotions and bring you joy, even if they are strangers you know only through their public persona. But more importantly, the lesson is to appreciate those you do know personally. Those who aren't famous, but who bring a smile to your face every time you see them. And to let them know that they are loved. I posted that on my personal Facebook page. If I have one pet peeve when it comes to Facebook in specific and social media in general, it's this. If someone is trying to make a joke, don't try to turn it into something serious. And if someone is trying to be serious, don't try to turn it into a joke. In other words, try to keep in the spirit of the discussion. I mean, one time I had a discussion derailed because one of my friends used my post to catch up with another friend who was participating in the discussion. So, if I specifically state that you shouldn't waste your energy cursing time, you probably shouldn't respond with, "Fuck 2016. Another person took it upon herself to complain about her personal losses in the past year and to rant about how we are too obsessed with celebrity. Now, it took me a little bit to respond because I had to give a respectful response. But my gut reaction was to say, "You know, if you want to go off on a tangent, do it in your own goddamn post. Besides, the point was that if you are sad at the loss of a celebrity you like, then you should be even more loving to the people close to you before you lose them." Now, I will grant you the societal obsession with celebrity is a reasonable point. Why do we care so much about celebrity? And don't think for a moment that this is restricted to America. I still don't understand the obsession with the British monarchy. I do think we go overboard quite often when it comes to how we follow celebrities. I really don't need to know the intricacies of their lives, but it seems some do. But when it comes to celebrity deaths, I really do understand why some people feel a loss, even though they've never met the person before. Let me give you an example. When Gene Wilder died, I wasn't surprised. A while back, Turner Classic Movies showed a Mel Brooks tribute with a taped congratulation from Wilder. When Wilder appeared on the screen, I gasped. He looked old, frail, and in my mind, near the end of his life. I clearly recall thinking he did not have long in this world. But that doesn't mean it didn't hurt when I heard he died. Gene Wilder made me laugh. I still literally laugh out loud when watching Young Frankenstein. I know the gags are coming, but it doesn't matter. I laugh at some of his scenes in Blazing Saddles as well. This man, who I never met, know nothing about other than what I saw on the screen, but who made me burst into laughter for years, is now gone. And I never got to thank him. Alan Rickman, David Bowie, Abe Vigoda, Prince, James Noble, Anton Yelchin, George Michael, William Christopher, George Gaines, Harper Lee, Larry Drake, Billy Paul, Ron Glass, Richard Libertini. Those are just the celebrities that I can think of that somehow swayed my emotions in their work. Others like Arnold Palmer, Muhammad Ali, John Glenn, Carrie Fisher, and Debbie Reynolds. They influenced and inspired vast numbers of people. And though I know nothing about any of them other than their work and maybe a little about their personal lives from their obituaries, they had some kind of influence, however small it might be, on me. That will never come from them again. Those things they did, they can never know how it affected me. Never know how it made me smile, how it made me think. Nor will I ever be able to tell them about it. And if I feel that way about people I don't know, surely I should make sure the ones I do know, who influence my life day in and day out, on a much deeper level, are aware of how grateful I am that they are in my life. That's the first lesson we should be learning from 2016. The second lesson, and I did say I was going to get a tiny bit political, is that this year has made it clearer than any other the nature of American politics. 2016 has made the blatant hypocrisy of both major political parties more vivid than ever. Never has it been clearer. And for a brief, brief moment, I thought people were starting to get it. I thought the sound was loud enough. I thought the picture was bright enough. But nope. For the most part, it seems to have been ignored. I see people happily oblivious to their own hypocrisy, which just makes them part of the problem. As we transition from a socialist administration to a corporatist administration, there's no reason to think there will be much of a difference. You still do not even have the freedom to do what you wish with the one thing you own for sure, your body. Now, I don't smoke marijuana. The closest thing I get is eating hemp seeds in my salad or my peanut butter sandwiches. But even if I did smoke, I can't do it in Texas without fear of government punishment. And it would be easy to blame the self-righteous religious conservatives in Texas for preventing legalization, but right to the end, the Obama administration was cracking down on the federal level. The states are thumbing their noses at the federal regulation, but the feds still perform raids, even in legal businesses in states that allow the recreational use. But that's the problem, isn't it? States allow it. States should have no say in the matter. Oh, but we can tax it and use that money to benefit communities. Bullshit. If someone takes something away from you that is rightfully yours, then only gives it back if you pay them money, that's ransom. Government is ransoming your rights to use marijuana, and you're letting them because they have the power and you think you have to play by their rules with your natural rights. The Patriot Act is still going strong. Not only did Obama not get rid of the legislation, he further entrenched it into our lives. Our civil liberties are still eroding. We can now be forced to buy something we may not want, so long as the government calls it a tax. Government still controls the definition of marriage. Gitmo is still open. Middle East regimes are overthrown and their dictator leaders are killed with the help of U.S. troops. We added even more countries to the list of places we've sent troops in for military actions. We even send military excursions into countries we are allies with without their knowledge. We're still at war. But I'm not even talking about military actions. We are at war with each other. We accept the narrative that we must fear and fight each other based on the dividing lines they draw. Whites are being programmed to fear minorities, and minorities are being programmed to fear whites. Christians are being programmed to fear the LGBT community, and the LGBT community is being programmed to hate Christians. Women are being programmed to hate men, and men are being programmed to fear women. And nobody wants to take a step back and think, and try to build bridges instead of tear each other down. But hey, let's look on the bright side. At least Republicans and Democrats will start acting normal again. For instance, Republicans can stop acting like they are against corporate welfare and the too-big-to-fail bailout philosophy. They can go back to supporting that kind of philosophy like they did under the Bush administration. Also, the Democrats can pretend to care that a president is sending American soldiers overseas to die and killing innocent civilians during military actions across the globe. The world is truly made for those who aren't cursed with self-awareness. No wonder more and more of us feel out of place. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.